Home team.
And here we go.
All right, hour two of Just Two today, the home team, presented by Golden Pantry. Eat, drink, be golden. Chris and Jeff till 6. David Johnston will cover the 6 to 7 o'clock hour tonight, live at the Athens Country Club. It is another meeting tonight of the Touchdown Club of Athens. And in that hour, you'll hear from Lindsey Scott. Hey, he caught a pass once.
Oh, man, he caught a bunch of them.
And then also ESPN reporter Holly Rowe, who is the keynote speaker tonight. And she did that Syracuse-Clemson game over the weekend. And
love Holly.
After Trevor Lawrence got hurt in that first half there, she asked old Dabo, coming off the field into halftime, hey, would you take Kelly Bryant back? Yes, I would.
Awesome.
That's what he said. So she asked the question of the weekend.
And he gave a great answer.
Yeah, he said, I love that kid. Heck yeah, I'd take him back.
And you know what? If he would have said, like, nope, he quit on his teammates, fine. But I like the fact that he didn't do the, oh, you're just trying to get me in trouble or something.
Yeah.
No, good for both of them.
Good, because she would have had to have bopped him over the head with that microphone. If he
Yeah, Dabo's not real tall either.
No.
No, he's not.
But then Holly Rowe's not quite as tall
as Maria.
As Maria, but whereas, you know, Maria's just towering over.
Oh, yeah, but she's like 6'2
Nick
or
6'3. Saban,
yeah.
Who's just a little man.
Well, Holly, we love her, too, because when we beat South Carolina in 05, our Bulldog Illustrated cover that year, because that was Spurrier's first year back, was Return of the Sith. And when she was down on the field right before kickoff, she held a Bulldog Illustrated Return
she
of
held
the
it
Sith.
Up.
I was
That's
like,
good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So I saw her at a Lady Dogs game later that year and told her about it. Ah, you just made our day. That was so awesome. And she's great. She had a fight against breast cancer and all, so she's awesome. I'm a big Holly Rowe fan. And I am also a very, very big Lindsey Scott fan. I mean, oh, man. I love Lindsey Scott.
Looking forward to Dave asking him tonight, hey, Lindsey, do you remember when you caught that pass against Florida?
Yes. How about the one against Tech for the touchdown?
Yeah, I remember that too.
Sure. Do you remember when you caught those two passes against Tennessee in 81 for touchdowns?
Yeah. I remember those too.
That was awesome.
Those are good, big catches.
Dave will do a much better interview than I would have there.
So there you go. That's coming up tonight, 6 until 7. So without further delay, we'll dive right into today's 5 at 5, brought to you as always by Duplicating Systems, more than a system, a solution. Jeff, let's talk about the Dogs from Saturday. They beat the Vols 38-12.
Yep.
Boy, I've really got my finger on the pulse of this Georgia defense. I said 29 for Missouri and 12 for Tennessee, and they
Bingo.
Hit those marks. But thoughts on the game? And, I mean, how do you feel overall? I mean, do you have that same, like, I mean, not completely satisfied feeling about it? Or it's like, no, we just beat Tennessee by 26 points. What's everyone's problem?
Now, there's some things that do concern me, of course. And, you know, the penalties for a third straight week. And I know Kirby is frustrated with that, and Georgia's working on that. It just gets back to not making the mental mistakes. A lot of that comes from trying to develop that leadership. But I also look at this team, and I see how talented they are. And there's some plays, like we said in that first hour, Bramer, that the little dump off to Swift, it was a little low, and he peaked out. Like, God, that would have been a touchdown. Or the slant there to Godwin. Boy, that had a chance to be a touchdown. So I feel like we're a gnat's whisker away. We're still a very, very good football team, and I stand by what I've said the whole offseason. I think this team's best football is in front of it in the second half of the year, come Florida and come November. Obviously, here's the thing. There's some things that George is doing, Chris, that if we don't correct them, it's going to bite us. We got lucky with the fumbles, the penalties, you know, for whatever reason it is, how much of it's on the line, the quarterback, the receivers. You know, we're struggling some in pass, not all the time, but just a couple of plays. But one busted play like that can change it around. And again, if Georgia doesn't correct those things, at some point it is going to come back to bite the Bulldogs. But, you know, Georgia can still correct those things. And this team the last 2 weeks certainly was out of sync a little bit. Still won at Missouri by 14, still beat Tennessee by 26. And I'm telling you, when the chips were down, when Tennessee made Georgia sweat a little bit on Saturday, Georgia put together a tremendous, tremendous drive.
I think what Georgia's – again, Georgia's offense –
minus the non-offensive touchdowns, is averaging 38.4 points per game, and the Dogs have scored 41, all right, well, 34,
right,
29, and 38 in three SEC games against subtracting non-offensive touchdowns, and have won by 24, 14, and 26 in their three SEC games.
Mm-hmm.
But what the offense needs is, I think, just at some point for Swift to become 100% again.
He's a difference maker.
He's the elite, yeah, just five-star running back we have. And, you know, I think it's the couple times Fromm got sacked on Saturday, it's just that's where Georgia's missing that that real fear and that threat of a running game that in a running back that I think really does strike fear in opponents. Because now when Georgia's in third and long, I think, you know, Georgia's opponents are like, Dogs have to pass here. I mean, because they're not going to be able to as surely potentially pick up a first down as they might have a year ago with Chubb and Michelle. And, you know, also, that's when Fromm's been getting dropped.
And the experience of those guys in pass blocking as well.
Yeah.
Throw that in there. And remember, I mean, these backs now, they're excellent backs. I mean, but they were 3, 4, and 5 last year. And, you know, unfortunately, Georgia had the number one recruit in the country. He injured his knee, so he's out for the season.
Right. Yeah, but, I mean, like, Harrion is essentially like an undrafted free agent in the NFL, where Georgia got him and signed him.
Sure.
I mean, Holyfield is a solid back, too. I mean, Swift is the one who was just an elite five-star recruit, but it's just those guys aren't Chubb and Michelle back there, and it's you know, when you look at the Dogs being able to run last year out of those passing down situations and do so successfully – we just don't have that. I mean, a year ago, our sack rate in passing downs was 6.7%. We've been sacked 4 times in 21 dropbacks this year in third and long. So, I mean, that's about 13% higher than it was a year ago, and you just don't have that as much as a year. Last year, teams still had to be on guard that Georgia might run the ball here.
Right.
So now, not so much.
You've got that effect for many reasons. Like you said, the threat of running it, Georgia being able to run it and get the first down, what those guys can do in pass blocking, and with those players being in there, those safeties have to creep up a little bit. It gives you more room in the passing game.
Yeah, because, I mean, on one sack Saturday, I mean, Georgia did get ridiculously lucky on that play that Nauta was able
it's
to.
It's the luckiest Georgia football play of all time.
Yeah, it was crazy. Yeah. It's definitely up there.
I mean, tell me one that was luckier.
No, I mean, I can't come up with one.
I mean, he gets sacked and fumbled.
The ball bounces right to him, and he picks it up, and he actually, I mean, scores.
It was a great
there to tackle
him. And Isaac, he missed the assignment, too. It was his guy who got
sacked. He's the guy who got beat, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's
maybe
it's,
that was the play. We, like, no one will admit it, but, like, hey, everyone wanted us to get to the tight ends. We found this clever way to do it. The tight end will miss his block and then scoop up the fumble and score.
Just how it was drawn up. And I thought, you know, Jake did a great job of shaking that off, and I thought he and Justin were both terrific.
Yeah,
on Saturday.
And I want to say, like, there were – especially that one touchdown run that Swift had.
He's getting there.
He's getting there, but he still isn't – he's still missing that, like, extra gear.
So he's – do you see him as being in – has gone from fourth gear to maybe fourth and a half, not quite to fifth yet?
Or is he 80 to 85%? Is he getting somewhere between 85 and 90 now?
Could be. I mean, he looked good Saturday.
Yeah, but it's still I still feel like we're missing that real explosiveness out of him last year.
Maybe we see it at Florida after the open date.
I wouldn't mind seeing it in Baton Rouge.
Wouldn't mind seeing it Saturday.
Yeah. Those guys almost lost to Tennessee State.
Yeah, they almost beat Notre Dame, too.
That was before Notre Dame made that quarterback change. Brandon Wimbush is now backing up Ian Book.
Isn't that crazy that just the process of transference there? Vanderbilt lost by 5 points to Notre Dame and beat Tennessee State by 4 points.
Yeah, and Notre Dame has since clobbered Wake Forest on the road and Stanford at home.
That was a good win. That game set up great for Notre Dame, though, with Stanford coming off that emotional win over Oregon.
Yeah.
Who, by the way, Oregon had a nice bounce back. They looked good against Cal.
They did. They're a solid unbeaten team. Oh, wait, they're not, because they didn't take knees at the end of that game against Stanford. Otherwise, they'd be sitting there in, like, really good shape.
In great shape.
Yeah.
And they play Washington. Is that in 2 weeks? Not this Saturday, but the next?
I believe, yes.
Let me peek. Yeah, that game is at Oregon. Oh, that's a day of Georgia LSU. Boy, that's a good day.
Yeah, I mean, think of
football.
Where Oregon would be right now if they had just taken knees against Stanford.
Yeah, they'd be like number 5 or 6 in the country right now.
Yeah, with their toughest remaining game at home.
That's exactly right. I'm looking to see if there's anything. Big Ten also that day, you got Michigan against Wisconsin, Michigan State, Penn State. Boy, that's a great day of college football right there.
And we got us at 3:30 that day.
Yes, sir.
No surprise there.
No surprise there. By the way, Virginia Tech with a bounce back. Probably should have seen that one coming.
And they get Notre Dame this week.
They do.
So maybe now Virginia Tech does give us hope that Notre Dame might get a loss.
Come on, Hokies.
Since they were able to rally and beat Duke. All right, moving on to the 5-5. The Falcons lose again yesterday to the Bengals, second straight week, where the offense just lights it up and the defense can't stop the opponent. And then the opponent gets the ball last, and essentially the Falcons don't even see it again, and they end up winning the game. What's the ceiling now for Atlanta, a team that went from, hey, we're hosting the Super Bowl this year and we might really be in it, to now 1-3. With two straight losses, both at home.
Well, I'll tell you what, thanks to Houston's last-second overtime comeback, now both of my Super Bowl picks are 1-3, the Falcons and the Texans.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you got some work to do there. Hey, the Chargers got lucky and beat San Francisco, so they're still alive.
By the way,
I might have to amend that one, though.
If the Rams stay healthy, they are going to the Super Bowl. They are the best team.
Yes.
It's not even close.
No.
In fact,
the game they played last Thursday night, they had two guys, including Aqib Talib, didn't even play. They were a little bit banged up in their secondary, which might explain why Kirk Cousins went off on them, but they still ended up winning by 7.
Real quick, I met a scout for the Rams on Saturday. He just had on his Rams gear, and I went and introduced myself. I believe he said his name was Doug Holmes. And I said, listen, I just got to tell you, you guys are a blast to watch, and I love Gurley. And he said, Gurley's the reason for everything. Yeah, absolutely, because those safeties have to play up. And, I mean, Goff's got all these great pass catchers in one-on-one pass situations.
Mm-hmm.
And then they've got a defensive line, too.
Yeah.
I mean, so they've got all the ingredients.
They don't have any holes.
No, they are tremendous. Okay, back to the Falcons, who, listen, their defense, they could be 4-0 right now. I mean, they don't convert in the red zone against Philly. They lose in overtime to the Saints, and then if Trufant gets that interception, they win.
But what are we looking at now? 7 of their last 12 games are going to be on the road?
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the killer there. So you lose back-to-back at home in this league, it's not going good. Pittsburgh's not in good shape, but picking the Falcons in the Northeast, do so at your own risk. Could they beat the Bucks and the
and
Giants?
And a desperate home? Pittsburgh team, too.
No question. Could they beat Washington on the road and the Browns on the road? Sure. I don't think Dallas is any good. They could beat them at home. They're not going to win in New Orleans. Could they beat the Ravens at home? Eh. Baltimore's better than Atlanta right now. Could they win at Green Bay? No. Could they beat the Cardinals at home? Yeah. Could they win at Carolina and Tampa those last two games? Maybe. Let's say they could get one of those. I mean, I still think they can have a winning record. But that is a tough division. And they're going to have to win shootouts. And they've lost 2 in a row. So I don't know. Is 9-7 the top?
I think so, yeah.
And they're also going to have to win all those games where it's like, boy, that's
– which would be going 8-4
the rest of the way. I mean, so they're going to have to steal one or two somewhere and also win all the games they're supposed to win, which with a beaten-up defense like this. I mean, listen, the fickle finger of fate just – dealt the Falcons a bad hand this year.
Big time, because the Atlanta's defense had started to really turn the corner of becoming, a great defense.
And it's one of those things, I get it with injuries, and one of them would have been devastating. I think they could have survived, Chris, if they would have lost just Neal or Jones.
Well, Jones is one of the best players at his position in the league.
And to lose both of those guys.
Yeah.
That's crippling.
I guess the hope would be that, like, which they play the Giants. They've got the Browns, although that game is in Cleveland.
Yeah.
And Cleveland's got a good offense
now.
They do.
That's the thing. Atlanta, you can't count on Atlanta to stop anybody right now.
No. Maybe at some point, too, the Browns will start giving the ball to Chubb more. The guy had 3 carries and 2 touchdowns. He looked like Jim Brown yesterday.
First Brown since Jim Brown to have 2 TD runs of over 40 in the same game.
In fact, I started receiving text messages from my family up there that said, hey, this Chubb guy is amazing.
Yes, he is.
You said it.
But, I mean, here's the thing. Like, Atlanta does get the Cardinals at home.
All right.
I don't think the Cowboys are good.
They're not. They're not good. Where's that game at?
Atlanta.
All right.
That'll be a half-Cowboy crowd there, though, by the way. They play the Browns and Skins on the road, and they get the Giants.
They're not going to win both of those, though.
I know. That's a problem.
All right, so the Giants, Cardinals, and Cowboys, that's three must-wins, so that's
games.
Four wins.
Can they beat the Ravens at home?
Yeah. Yeah, they can. Yeah, sure, they can beat the Ravens at home. But
what about the back-to-back to end at Carolina and Tampa? You don't give them a split there? Or do they lose both of those?
So I think a split is.
I think a split's realistic.
Yeah. By the way, I believe the Bucs have said they're going to – Winston is starting. He's back.
I mean, if they could steal the one at Pittsburgh, they've got Tampa at home with a chance to get to 500.
Yeah.
But again, the defense is not good. And the whole next man up, and
it's rubbish.
No.
You lost
two Pro Bowl caliber players in Jones and Neal.
That's a loser-leave-town match, I think, at Pittsburgh Sunday.
No doubt. And then who's the other – the corner they lost – the third guy they lost, was it last week?
Oh, the Ricardo Allen?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's gone.
Yeah, I mean, it's three starters off your defense.
Yeah. From a defense, that's what I said all offseason. The thing that worried me about Atlanta's defense is the
gosh, you hit it.
It's not deep.
And then
you look at that depth chart.
But still, all that being said, you know, Atlanta had a chance with the ball, Saints, 37-37, can't get past midfield. Marcus Trufant, the guy, first-round pick, elite corner, drops an interception that would have won the game. Got to have your guys be guys. And the bottom line is, as good as he is, and I get it, they scored 37 points, but Ryan and that offense had the ball in their hands with plenty of time against the Saints and couldn't get it done.
Yeah.
And Trufant had the ball in his hands and couldn't get it done.
I mean, when you're not stopping him any other time, when you've got a shot at it.
And here's – I knew Atlanta was going to lose when they blocked the punt, got the ball on the 7-yard line, and didn't score a touchdown. You're not going to win when that happens. Sorry.
Well, no, not when every other instance the team you're playing is just marching right up and down the field.
Correct.
Red Rocket just throwing missiles yesterday.
The guy's got strong hands. And, again, that just – whether it was the call or the interpretation, whatever, that's one where you think the NFL's like the WWF. Just like the spot in that Browns-Raiders game.
The Browns-Raiders game really was like, what was the thought there? It's like extending the game? Because if the Browns had gotten that first down, they would have just taken knees and the game would have been over. But then now it's like all of a sudden, okay, you know, we'll play on now.
One of my buddies, he said, I see NFL trying to get Gruden to win. It's like, maybe. I don't know.
Could be. Who knows? But right now, Cleveland seems like a better story because they got this hotshot rookie quarterback in Baker Mayfield. Like, they thought they'd be better off getting him a win.
That's a team that could also be 4-0, and they're 1-2-1.
Yeah, they got to get a new coach, though. That coaching staff is no good.
And it's one, it's like, I get it, the talent wasn't there, but they were 1-31.
No, the talent is, it's not that bad. It's the NFL.
You should be able to win three or four games.
Yeah, no, to win one game in 2 years.
Yeah, you're historically god-awful.
Yeah, it's, no NFL team has that.
No.
Is that down at talent from
no,
all
but,
other teams?
Because it's like I said, almost everybody in the pros was at worst second team all conference for their college.
Yeah. I mean, even the guys that they've been trotting out at quarterback the last couple of years were really good college
of
quarterbacks.
Course, of course.
And they were still going.
Owen. And I love 1-15. Can't get worse than that. Yeah.
And then he had to jump in the lake because he said, I guarantee we'll be better or something, or I'll jump in Lake Erie.
He had to
go and dive into Lake Erie. Jeff, watching the Dodgers and Rockies right now, scoreless in the bottom half of the fourth inning. The Braves will face the winner of this game in either L.A. or Denver in the division series starting Thursday. What are the big roster questions that the Braves have to consider this week?
I think for the Braves, Chris, they've got to decide, first of all, what they're going to do with their pitching and how many starting pitchers they're going to put on the roster. You know, is there a speedster that they can maybe sneak in there to help them in late-game pinch-running situations? So I think this Braves team, they're going to go in with the idea of knowing they got a four-man rotation. So if that's the case – you know, for a guy, I know this might sound nuts, But if you're Tehran, or I'm going to answer your question with a question. If you're Tehran or Newcomb and you're not in the four-man rotation plans, is it then worth it to have them on the roster?
Well,
do you get where I'm coming from there?
I guess the bullpen, and maybe we saw – I think Newcomb and Toussaint both pitched out of the bullpen this weekend in Philadelphia.
Get them ready.
So, and that's the first time Newcomb has done it. There's no doubt you're going Fultonevich, Gausman, and Anibal Sanchez are the top three. So it comes down to who that fourth guy would be, and I wonder if it – it is just going to be Julio, and Newcomb and Toussaint will be bullpen guys, and then they've got to figure out, you know, the rest of the back end. And then, you know, also see what Dansby Swanson's status is going to be.
He's got to play. I mean, you're in the playoffs. You got to play.
Even if he's useless as a hitter?
Got to get in there. Lay down bunts.
I mean, is he a good enough defensive player?
He's got a good glove. He's really good. And it's his glove hand.
Yeah. So he don't have to worry about throwing. But hitting and swinging might hurt.
Yeah. I mean, what's your answer to your own question?
Of the roster questions?
Yeah.
I mean, really, most of it's pitching. And I guess, yeah, you got to figure out just what you might be able to get out of Swanson. That's the only real, as far as the lineup goes. The lineup is what the lineup's been all year, but... Dodgers have just homered and taken a 2-0 lead in the bottom half of the fourth inning against the Rockies. So it just comes down, I guess, to potentially who you're going to trust if you need a fourth starter.
I'm like you. I think I would lean Touki Toussaint. I know he's young, but, I mean,
when you've looked at Tehran all year and his first inning ERA, the number of home runs he gives up in the first inning, and also just in the first three innings, he's given up like 26 home runs in the first three innings this year, that it's, you know, if you're down 2-1, then that's just
–
that's a big roll of the dice right there. If you're up 2-run, maybe it's a risk you're willing to take then because you've got a game in hand, but – boy, if you're trailing in the series and all of a sudden he can't get out of those first couple of innings, which has been his track record, then you better hold your breath.
Well, and broad brush here, but most postseason games are close. Most postseason games are low scoring. It's hard to string together hits. As we all know, postseason baseball is different. So the long ball is even more valuable in the postseason. And you know, teams are going to go to those bullpens probably even earlier at this point. So you're right. I mean, he could go out there and, you know, give up a two-run job in the first inning. You're down 2-0. You might not be able to catch up, even with a very good offense.
No, because you're facing
– you know, let's say you're playing the Dodgers and Kershaw's out there and, you know, and then they go to these bullpen aces and everybody – I mean, all these good teams – I mean, you look at the Yankees, you look at Boston, Houston, I mean, just some of these guys, Cleveland, they bring in out of the pen.
Well, Julio's been walking a lot of guys, too.
Walks and home runs. That's a bad combination.
Well, yeah, I mean, in regular season, you're walking Marlins, you'll be able to wiggle off that hook. But when you get into the playoffs.
Facing that Dodgers lineup?
Yeah, Dodgers, the Rockies lineup, any of these lineups in the postseason. Dodgers are still hitting in the bottom half of the fourth inning with a 2-0 lead.
Okay.
And finally, Jeff, on Saturday.
I know where this is going.
You met, if I got a picture, you took a picture with Ric Flair, and I have to say I'm incredibly jealous of that. Jeff, is that the most famous person that you've ever been photographed with?
It's got to be. Because of it, he's worldwide famous.
Well, I mean, he's the nature boy.
16-time world heavyweight champion. He's got to be.
I was more jealous of that than that time Mike Mills subtweeted you.
It was pretty awesome.
Or tagged you in a
tweet
or whatever.
For me, the most excited I ever got, when I was 10 years old, the day before the Sugar Bowl, I went through a crowd. I got Herschel's autograph. That was still the most excited I've ever been. But this was I'll tell you, I was shaking a little bit. My friend Jason snapped the picture. My buddy Adam Gillespie got in there with me.
And Adam did it right, though, because he was holding up the four in the picture. Yeah.
It was one of those deals. There wasn't much time to think. He was walking through, and I looked up and said, holy bleep, that's Ric Flair. I got to get my picture. I didn't hesitate.
Yeah.
And
You didn't tell him to hold your Rolex?
Hold my Rolex, Tony Schiavone. And he was great. He was incredibly, incredibly gracious. And even the great Steve Hummer, one of the great columnists in America, came and goes, "You just got your picture taken with the nature boy, didn't you?"
Yeah, I did. I got that text while I was walking to my car trying to get home so I could make kickoff. And I went, "I'm jealous."
That was pretty darn neat. And that was one of those, I'm not going to lie, I sent that picture to a lot of my friends.
Yeah. No, it was fantastic.
And he was great when he got out on the field.
Jeff and the Nature Boy.
Woo!
You didn't get him to put you in a figure four?
I would have let him if he wanted to.
Yeah, I mean, I might have just like gotten,
can you put me in a headlock?
Hey, will you put me in a figure four leg lock right now? Thank you.
Awesome.
All right, there's the 5 at 5 brought to you by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution.